It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry. Should we talk about
the government? Welcome to Friday. I'm already tired. I just started the show. I'm tired already.
You're ready for the weekend.
I got a golf tournament tomorrow. I got Summerfest, Father's Day weekend. All of us fathers are going to be enjoying the hell out of this weekend.
You're tired? Some of us were up past our bedtime last night.
That's true.
As I was. I went to bed at 11:30.
Why
2 hours.
Why are you up so late?
I watched The Big Bang from a viewing platform.
I guess we can tell your husband that was The Big Bang if Steve Scafidi thinks it is.
And filling in by that lovely voice, that gravelly tone voice from staying up way too late at Summerfest, Joseph Pecky, but filling in for Bill McCosh, who is world traveling, we won't say where, Jake Curtis from the Institute for Reform and Government. Jake, welcome to the show.
Morning. I don't know what to expect right now because
it's going
to
be a while.
You look nervous. Why are you nervous?
Well, I warned him. I said, this might be a loose show, Jake.
It's a little less structured than normal. So let's start with what is a serious story. Obviously, the Iran war. What is that? 3.5 months, 4 months, something like that. We now have a potential agreement, negotiations. Although there's been some delays, pullback now on some of the nuts and bolts of what this is. Kristen and I spent a ton of time yesterday talking about what I think it isn't. It doesn't seem like it's a settlement or a change or any really positive for the country. We'll let you start, Joe Zepecki, Democratic strategist. What do you think?
Yeah, this is an MOU, not a final treaty. They announced it Sunday, I think just ahead of the UFC fight. President Trump wanted to have a peace deal for his birthday. And what was so bizarre immediately was usually you reach an agreement between nations and you go out and you say, hey, we have a deal. You let the world see the deal. It took days to even show the public the 14 points in the page and a half. They kicked the signing of it until yesterday or today or later in the week. And now today was supposed to be the first round of negotiations on the next leg of this. And first, the Iranian negotiators decided they were going to postpone their visit because Israel was continuing to strike Lebanon. And then last night, J.D. Vance and the American negotiating team said, well, we're going to postpone as well. So this is far from over. And a couple weeks ago, I talked about how he was not the boy who cried wolf. He was the president who cried peace. Clearly, he understood that strategically and politically, this was not going his way and he needed to get out. I think his lack of leverage, or as he would describe it, lack of cards, is sort of exposed by the bullet points in this MOU that he signed in Versailles, which anyone who knows their history has some pretty ironic echoes. So this is far from over. He's already saying if after 60 days, we don't have a further deal, we'll just go back to bombing. The administration already kind of seems to be setting up Vice President Vance as the fall guy. So I don't think for a second that this is a fully baked cake and it's over. And I'm glad that the hot war shooting part has stopped for the meantime. But boy, this is not a good deal.
Jay Curtis, what's the conservative position on the deal?
So I'm glad Joe was pointing that out, that at least the kinetic actions are stopping. I will say, Joe, I haven't heard that from many people on the left. I mean, you seem to be like the one voice. I find it ironic that on the one hand, you have somebody like Senator Baldwin championing the JCPOA, right? The Obama deal with Iran, which, by the way, really didn't have the effect that she and others claim it to have had.
How so?
Well, if it had had the impact, right, there would have been certainty that Iran was not seeking nuclear weapons. We didn't have that, right? So the deal didn't affect that. Last time I checked, Iran has continued over the last decade to fund Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis. So it was just I found it very ironic that Senator Baldwin and others are citing that as like the gold standard and now criticizing this deal. And I don't disagree. There's still a lot of uncertainty. And frankly, there are a lot of conservatives that aren't satisfied with assuming this deal goes forward, some of the elements, for example, unfreezing a lot of these assets that have been frozen for a decade, you know, this reconstruction fund that apparently is supposed to be funded by Gulf states and not U.S. taxpayer dollars, right? There's some legitimate concerns here.
But to Joe's point, was this a desperation move by the president, his administration, to get something done, something signed, sealed, and hopefully delivered, because it was not looking good?
Maybe, but honestly, when you're talking about foreign policy, like, to Joe's point, like, he made the reasonable point, like, at least the kinetic action has ceased. Like, that's a good thing. So, I mean, I don't quite, I've seen that argument, and I don't quite understand it. Like, it's not a completely finalized deal, but for now, right, it's moving in the right direction. Like, to me, that's a good thing.
It's a,
like,
step of
how
progress.
How is that bad? Like, it's like, I look at somebody like Senator Baldwin, and I ask, like, so what in her mind at this point in time, like, realistically, I know she may have disagreed with the initial actions, but right now, at this moment in time, what does she want to see happen?
Well, I mean, that is, because I think we had a texter yesterday, be like, what would you have done? I was like, well, not gone to war, but, like, we're here, right? Yeah. And so at this point, we're here, we're in it. And so is it at this, you're trying to mitigate loss? Or are you actually trying to gain something? And what are we trying to gain? So is the argument you're making is that what we had in the original Obama deal was not enough. And so at this point, we are willing to release more of, like, the sanctions and give them more money in order to guarantee that they're not going to fund the Houthis and Hezbollah. And is that your argument, well, as far as we get more guarantees of global terrorism?
That is one of the arguments on the right. Okay. I actually personally, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Okay.
Because I think the JCPOA, right, it was $1 billion. We're looking at significantly more unfreezing assets, lifting sanctions. Like, if I were preparing this, I would want far more detailed and confirmed actions on the part of Iran that are going to establish that this funding will not go to terrorism, that they're not continuing to pursue a nuclear weapon. I don't, based on the MOU that I've seen, like, I don't think it's there.
Yeah.
So actually, I don't think there's enough there. But that is an argument that
do we have time for more of this after the break? Because I have one rule this week. Don't come for my boss. Obama opened his presidential center. I have a couple nits to pick with your description of the JCPOA.
We'll look forward to that after the break. Joseph Pecky, Jake Curtis, Kristen Steve, Point Taken, Friday edition on 620 WTMJ. We're all ready to talk politics on this Friday. Hope you're ready to listen. Jake Curtis filling in for Bill McCosh, who's on assignment somewhere in the world. Joseph Pecky, Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi. You know where we're at. We talk politics. Joseph Pecky had a retort to what Jake was talking about.
Yeah, I stipulated that the JCPOA, the Obama nuclear deal, did not address other regional, you know, actors. This was five nations plus Iran, which as a coalition, right, with many other European countries who care more about whether or not Iran had nuclear ballistic capability, the verification of that was working. They were capped at 3.67 enrichment. There were 24-hour monitorings by video. There were routine and regular inspections of their enrichment facilities. It was working. It was not a deal for eternity. It was time limited. I think it was 20 years. It was always going to have to go back and be renegotiated. But when Donald Trump tore it up during his first term, that is when Iran said, okay, well, then we're going for the bomb. And that is the difference in approach between this administration, which really has only had one ally throughout this in Israel, and you can see publicly, which, well, you know, can you imagine what it's like behind the scenes, that Netanyahu and Trump are kind of at cross purposes. Trump is going out and telling people, yeah, I just yelled at Bibi and told him to stop. He's got to stop, because Iran is saying no deal if you can't get Israel to back off in Lebanon. But Trump has not built a coalition of other international partners with interests in the region to help manage this conflict. And so that's the difference of diplomacy backed by America's awesome military might versus ready, fire, aim strategy without any partners. And so I think that's why we're one of the reasons we're in this pretty weak position in terms of this MOU.
Well, it is interesting. So I think yesterday Vance publicly was pretty critical of Israel. I think the quote was, Donald J. Trump is the only head of state in the entire world who is sympathetic to the nation of Israel at this moment in time. And he happens to be the head of state of the world superpower. If I was in the cabinet of the Israeli government, I might not be attacking the only powerful ally that I have anywhere left in the entire world. Which is kind of true. And so, I mean, are we just in bed with a not great partner right now?
I don't think it's fair to say in bed. I think what's challenging is, like, Israeli doctrine is if they are attacked, they have to respond because they are an island surrounded by people who wish them ill. And so when missiles are launched at Israel and the United States president is saying, you got to let it go. Don't worry about it. It wasn't that bad an attack, that he's asking an ally to violate their strategic doctrine.
Oh, okay. So I understand that point, but right, that you, this is not unique to this relationship. Look at NATO. I mean, what have we, you know, the entire debate over Ukraine, which again, I think we should be providing assistance. And mm-hmm. I think the NATO, you know, but you look at Article 5, right? I mean, that's the whole point of what's happening in Ukraine right now. Should anything happen to a NATO member, right? That's an automatic response from the coalition, the alliance. And that's kind of been the driving the debate in Ukraine. So to say, like, this is something unique to Israel and the U.S. is just like, I don't see that, because that's exactly what we're seeing with NATO. I would note, because of, again, there are things I disagree with Trump on, but like getting NATO partners to actually increase defense spending, I think is a very much a positive coming out of this administration, in the sense that we had years where that fell on the U.S. taxpayer. And so to say that there's no allies, I mean, I think Germany has stepped up. I think they're approaching 5% GDP.
But now you're talking about Ukraine, Russia, and we're not talking about Iran and Israel.
But you're saying that this is somehow unique, like the U.S.-Israel kind of dynamic. And I'm saying, like, that's not unique, right? This is the same kind of analysis can be applied to Ukraine, where, I mean, we have to somehow honor those alliances, right? It's no different. We have to honor that kind of relationship with Israel. So it is complicated.
Is the shakiness of this agreement with Iran, potentially, because of the nature of the shakiness of their government? We blew up half their leadership, or all their leadership, and now we're dealing with a sort of the unknown quantity.
Well, and this is the problem, right? There was never a case made to the American people or the Congress. We're going to go do this. This is why we're going to do it. These are the objectives. The objectives were constantly shifting. It's going to be regime change. They took out the Ayatollah in the initial strike. What has replaced it? A even more hard right, you know, backed by the Iranian
president has
National
said the
Guard
opposite.
Corps.
He said
right. And now he's saying, well, it's fine that it's not regime change.
I think that's an important point, Joel. And frankly, I kind of agree in the sense that I agreed something needed to be done with Iran. Every administration going back to 1979 has had to address this. There's been thousands of U.S. military members killed by Iran and their proxies. Like, something needed to be done. Frankly, I think the messaging was off in the sense that they didn't outline how hard this was going to be. Yep. I think if you look at, you know, maybe the traditional kind of hawk position, which I mean includes some Democrats, like, this was never going to be a 1 week regime change effort. Like, that was not realistic. So I think if there was a mistake, I think it would have been better for the administration to say this is going to be months, not weeks or days. This is going to be really hard. We're not sure if there can be regime change here. But ultimately, I think a lot of individuals initially supported this because of the potential to actually have a solution in Iran.
Yeah, they screwed it up in a lot of ways. And it's not over yet. Let's hope for the best possible outcome.
But I wish there was more of that, Joe. What is the best possible outcome, though?
The best possible outcome, in my view, is a Strait of Hormuz that is like the rest of international waters, open for free passage, which would mean Iran does not get to toll or charge environmental fees because they will use those resources to rebuild their arsenal. It would,
and to fund terrorists.
It would be a verifiable commitment to not go back to enriching uranium and rushing for the bomb. If you get those two things, then there's a tremendous cost to this, but at least we are not worse than we were when we started.
He is Joseph Packey, Jake Curtis filling in for Bill McCosh and Kristen and Steve after the break, celebrating our 250th with Algae after this. All right, we got a minute and a half here to dissect this incredible reflecting pool controversy. No one's going to be surprised by my take. This administration superficially looks at a lot of things. They didn't do their homework on this and save the text I don't want to see you cut and paste in arguments that some conservative talker is making. It's stupid. There's a right way to fix this and a wrong way. They did it the wrong way. And I agree that it needs to be fixed. Joe.
I don't care. On the list of things that
of course, Joe.
Are offensive about this administration and their utilization of public dollars, this is very, very low on my list.
Boy, Joe and I are like agreeing today. I mean, in the following sense, like out of all the things to be fired up about, I don't understand that. And frankly, as we were talking off air, if you've been to DC recently, the city does look better. Like I don't, whatever side of the aisle you're on, like why would it be a bad thing for the administration to want to clean up the city?
It's not a bad thing, but $14 million to not clean it up is a waste of our money. That's why.
There are other examples. Oh, Union Station is beautiful.
Oh, trust me. There's
good examples, Steve. I mean, we all love D.C. Why not clean it up? I don't understand.
Speaking of cleaning up D.C., is that the National Guard still just like roaming around?
I don't even know anymore.
Who's been there the most recently?
Bill.
Yeah. But I mean, that was obviously such a big story last summer, and I don't even know how many like troops are on the ground. Just
I don't know that they are, and I think their posture may have changed quietly after Homan took over.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
I'd be more confident if the National Guard had been given the opportunity to clean
that's
it up.
That's a great point. Army Corps of Engineers should have cleaned that pool, not some contractor with a no-bid win.
Kind of falls into their work product, right?
No anyway, comment.
Again, totally agree. In the scheme of things, insignificant, but it's an allegory to what
I
see.
But it annoys Steve.
But Steve, would you agree? Like, I mean,
it needs to be an
effort to actually clean up the nation's landmarks is a good thing.
Yeah, we got to go to ABC right now. We're just winding it up, just getting started on our Friday panel, the political
figure
quartets, Joe Zepecki, Jake Curtis from IRG, Institute for Reform and Government, and for Bill McCosh and Kristen Bryce-Deeskey. Let's talk Wisconsin governor's race. Joe was in studio for a half hour, and we got a lot of feedback. I don't know if I told you that.
Good or bad?
Good. You come with an informed knowledge base about what happened last weekend in Dane County, on what Democrats were doing, the voices that those attendees of 2000 or whatever it was heard from the seven candidates. So we'll start with you. Give me the state of the race among the those candidates for the Democratic nomination for governor of Wisconsin.
I think people are starting to get a little sporty.
Sporty?
A little sporty. A little spicy. Might be seeing some elbows getting thrown. I think this campaign is finally ramping up in earnest. State Senator Kel DeRoy's statewide ad buy announced this week. The Brennan campaign is on air. The Rodriguez group, and maybe I'm forgetting one other one, are now
Crowley's up.
And Crowley, that's what it was, are paying to communicate with voters. That was a long time coming, but now the campaign, I think, will start in earnest for these last 50 days or so. There is more chatter that I'm picking up. Hey, what are we going to do? Who can win? Who can't? And my message is same as it ever was. Our field is an embarrassment of riches. Any one of these candidates could beat Tom Tiffany. None of them are guaranteed, and none of them are a guaranteed loss either. So I know my conservative friends are like, hey, give us Fran Hong. We got her. I would be a little careful what you wish for, because I think the political environment is shaping up to be worse for Republicans than 2018. That means there's opportunity for Democrats if we, whatever happens in the next 50 days, we all agree. August 12th, one team, one dream, and that's a trifecta.
Jake Curtis, looking at it from the other side of the aisle.
That was an interesting take.
I'm an interesting guy.
So, look, this is an interesting field. I'll give you that. I think what is I think, really critical at this point is some of the positions that these Democratic candidates have taken, I think, are going to have to be explained. I get it. You're in a primary. This is a problem with a kind of a wild primary. You're just going to go further and further to the left. At a recent forum, I think it was in Madison, every candidate raised their hand when they were asked, are you going to eliminate Act 10? Again, I think we've talked about this in the past. When you kind of remove the politics and Walker bad, talk to even left-leaning administrators in local units of government, and you tell them, you know, what are you going to do tomorrow if Act 10 is repealed? There is no plan.
It's a classic easy to say, hard to do thing.
Easy to say, hard to do. I would point out with respect to school choice. Now, to be fair, I think everybody has indicated they want to repeal Act 10. I think with school choice, there's kind of like a mixed bag. And
some
somebody
nuance.
Like Hong is all in, eliminate school choice. So, okay, go down the road and talk to those, you know, that single African-American mom at St. Marcus who enjoys and sees a benefit of sending her kids to St. Marcus. You're going to have to explain, like, okay, sorry, you got to go out of the MPS school. Like, no options, right? So those are hard positions that you're going to have to explain once you're presumably the nominee. I would like it if they could start explaining it now and just not continue to move further and further to the left. And again, I'm trying to be objective in the sense that this is what happens in primaries, yeah. right? The Republicans have gone through this, but they need to explain some positions. One other thing, Roy is now apparently, nobody really picked up on this. She's advocating access to state health care and pension. Like, is that statewide? Like, that's
for her, like health care?
I don't know. This is my point. What are the details? Like, I mean, a pension is something that you earn that's vested by serving in a local unit of government, state government.
Are she talking about the WRS system?
Well, yeah, yes, I don't know. I knew that.
That was in the Wisconsin Politics reporting. I don't know what that means. This is my point. She needs to explain, like, what does that mean? Huh. It may sound good in a Dem forum in Madison. What does it mean statewide?
As a conservative, is there a preferred candidate in your mind to go up against Tom Tiffany?
Well, a lot of agreement with Joe. I guess I'm in the camp of, so on the one hand, I mean, Frances Hong is a socialist.
Francesca,
is a socialist. Like, I think she has taken, I mean, when you look at police and some of these issues, I don't know how you defend that. I also, though, am fearful that if we're in an environment where the Republicans are maybe down, you know, 4 or 5 structurally going into a race, like, I do not want to see a Hong governor. I think Tiffany would have a really good shot against her. But then there's always that risk. Like, what if she wins?
That's why I said, careful what you wish for.
Right. But that being said, like, I think Tiffany versus Hong is a very interesting matchup. You cannot get two different extremes. Northern Wisconsin, kind of a regular guy versus somebody from Madison that's going to have a base. But does that base play well? Again, even on the Dem side, your blue collar 60-year-old Dem union guy in outstate Wisconsin, is he voting for Hong? I don't know.
Two things. Can I put you down to join my coalition for jungle primaries where the two parties run together?
No.
Why?
But you're sitting here complaining about primaries on both sides.
I'm not complaining about them.
What's your thing against jungle primaries?
All right.
This is also, I know, like, Final Five voting and stuff like that. I think it's great. But what's your argument against it?
Because I think the risk is, like, you end up in some of these states where all your, you know, if you're structurally leaning one way or the other, you're just going to get one extreme like the light version. I mean,
but we're
I
not
think
that
having
state,
the two.
And it's, we're not. The idea is it drives out the extremes on both parties.
That's the argument. But point to a state where that actually is happening.
I don't think there's a purple swing state that's like 50-50.
Okay,
like
Wisconsin would be the experiment.
In Alaska, when Sarah Palin lost her run for Congress, who I would say was fairly extreme, and because they had ranked choice voting, she didn't get enough people to put her as second.
Here's my second point is, among the notes of caution that I would share with my conservative friends, is you all know full well that in 2016, there were people whose first choice was Donald Trump and their second was Bernie Sanders, or vice versa. And there is something to the Democratic Socialist message of populist outrage and anger that is resonating right now. And so, to me, if Hong is going to emerge, she's grown, but she's got a long way to go to get the nomination, and then an even further way to go to win in the fall if she is the nominee. That is the pool of voters she's got to demonstrate that she can go and get, is those people who would flip-flop between Trump and Sanders.
That is a really small sliver of the electorate, though.
You know they're out there.
Well, I mean, it's basically CD3, right? It's that entire part of the state that was Obama Trump voters, and we've seen also like a lot of those counties went for Crawford in the spring.
It's going to be a fascinating result for that primary, because I mean, I would be shocked by nothing.
Are we pretending that Barnes getting 6 in a 7 way straw poll is not fascinating?
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I wasn't particularly surprised by it. Because I think do we have time for this?
Let's come back and talk about it. Because I think talking about the nuances of what a straw poll is, maybe you guys did this on Monday. I didn't listen.
A little bit.
We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, along with Steve Scafidi, Joe Zepecki, Jake Curtis is here in for Bill for this week and next week. All right, let's, for people who are not listening on Monday, yeah, like me, explain the significance or lack of significance of the straw poll that came out of the Wisconsin Democrats convention last weekend.
It's an interesting snapshot. It is not determinative or predictive. Look no further than in 2018, Kelda Royce won the state party. Tony Evers was way down in third place. And then 10 weeks later, doubled everybody else's vote and had a walk to victory.
So meaningless.
Not meaningless. I think it can be a sign of momentum. It can be a sign of who's building a coalition and doing their inside game politics. And I think Sarah Rodriguez has done that pretty well throughout the campaign. That's how you put together a win.
So what is Mandela Barnes really good at when it comes to campaigning?
Inspiring people. So you asked before the break, was it surprising that he was so low in it? I don't think so, because these are the insideriest insiders. And you guys might laugh at this, but like, Mandela has never been like a party guy. He's always been a kind of willing to take on the system. Look no further than he primaried a pretty popular incumbent Democratic state senator.
And lost.
Right? But like, he's been willing to, like, there were a lot of people who say, hey, man, you know, wait your turn. This is not the time. And he was like, no, the senator isn't doing a good enough job. I want more. I'm gonna go for it. He's never been afraid to take on the party. So I am not particularly shocked that the insideriest insiders within the party, based on that and the fact that he came up a little short against Senator Johnson 4 years ago, are looking around.
And also, so, because I haven't been to one. So when you're there, like, how many people who attend this, because you said it's a little less than 2,000.
It was less than 1,000 votes in the straw poll.
And how many of the people who vote are people who are already, like, part of the campaign?
Almost all of them.
And it
turns out the guests could vote, I learned this week. Usually you have to be a delegate to vote in these kinds of things. It's not the party's poll. But so if you're just like walking off the street and pay $15, I don't know if campaigns were trying to work the electorate. It's interesting.
If we're going to use your comparison to Tony Evers finishing third, Barnes finished sixth. That's not even a strong sixth.
But the thing they have in common is at 8 years ago, Evers was the most well-known by virtue of having run statewide multiple times, and he was above water or popular within the Democratic base. That's the case for Mandela. He's still the best known among these candidates, and that name ID takes you a long way in a primary.
And he's not up with the ad buy yet.
Not yet.
Is he even more left than Hong is?
No.
No.
How is he not? What's his distinction?
I've never heard Mandela say that he wishes there were no prisons in the world.
That's true. We talked about that last week. Yeah, she's got him on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing here is it's obviously the campaign who wins it is going to make it out to be, right, the
most
ultimate,
important
poll ever taken. And that's just politics. I would agree with Joe. It's a snapshot. So it's not determinative, but it's a snapshot. I think what's interesting is you look at the results. I have them up here. So Rodriguez at 164 votes. There were a total of almost 600 ballots cast. So clearly the front runner has some infrastructure, which makes sense. She's a lieutenant governor, although apparently her and the governor don't get along. I think that's
those are your words, not mine.
maybe his words, her words. I mean, I'm not sure we have to dig that deep. But then you start to peel it back a little further. Hong at 138. Kelda Royce, who again, I mean, maybe she wants everybody in the WRS system. I'm not sure. She's going to have to explain that at 114. Crowley, 78. Brennan, I think maybe the one moderate at 52, Barnes, and then Hughes.
You don't think Missy's moderate?
I mean, I think she has moderate tendencies. But, to that point, the top half is a progressive wing. The almost irrelevant candidates at this point, at least according to this poll, or the energy in the party, are not with the moderates. And again, that's all well and good during a primary, but you get to a general, you're going to have to explain these positions.
Jake Curtis, Joseph Heike, Kristen, and Steve on this Friday. If you got a question, fire it off. We'll try to get it into the show. We got one more segment before we hit the top of the hour news. You're listening, of course, to Point Taken on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken.
You should have rolled tape on that break.
All right, so if you are watching...
We could just let you guys fight for a while.
Yeah. If you're watching the live stream, you'll notice that Joseph Heike is wearing his Obama-Biden shirt and... We got to watch it because it was carried live on CNN yesterday, but I didn't get to hear any of it, really. And I've seen clips from yesterday, but yesterday was the grand opening of the Obama Presidential Center.
Yep.
not library. I don't really know what the distinction is. Maybe you do. And it looked great. I mean, it's like the very millennial Democrat, like liberal hopes and change feelings, I think, were out yesterday.
Yeah. I've been telling people it was sort of like a looking into Earth 2. A different time,
let's not
a different
get too
place.
Crazy about
no,
it.
But it was
Come
because
on.
You had presidents of both parties honoring
that's my, that's
one of
my,
the one of the members
nice.
Of their club. Mm-hmm. You had a conversation about, you know, the quiet dignity of the American people and how no one else gets to decide who is more American than anyone else. And it was stirring and hopeful and thoughtful. And it is a center because it is both. A public library is part of the Chicago Public Library
and
system.
A playground.
Go take it, and a center that is designed to inspire the next generation of change makers. Because the crux of this comes down to what the former president said, which is that we is the most powerful word in American history. We the people, we shall overcome. Yes, we can. Out of many, we are one. And that emphasis on we stands in such stark contrast to so much of the politics we see today. I had the great fortune to be a small, small part of the big machine, both serving in Washington in his administration and on the reelection campaign in 2012. And we had a little alumni gathering on Wednesday night. And the humility of this former president to pay respect to the people who were part of that machine and say, listen, guys, like, it really ain't about me. That will stick with me for a very long time. It's the audacity of humility at this point. And so I thought it was a very special day. I can't wait to see the center.
Me too.
Myself. I'm going to go later this year with my dad. And if it took anything away from it, it's that things can change very quickly.
All right, sounds like you need a tissue. Jake,
I was going to say,
comments?
I need some Kleenex. Wow. And I couldn't find my John McCain t-shirt, so apparently...
I've got a John McCain t-shirt, too. Love John McCain.
America's hero.
So a couple observations. So first of all, I think one thing that stood out to me, kind of just thinking back on the Obama administration, is that, interestingly, on some issues, and apparently this is going to be my theme today, is just how far left the current Democratic Party has moved. I mean, Joe, you'll get some of the issues. Border encounters. Never more than 500,000... border encounters during the Obama administration annually.
Enforced immigration rules.
Actually, on some of these measures, yeah, enforced immigration rules. I mean, December of 23, almost 350,000 border encounters in the Biden administration. When you look at the, you know, foreign policy, use of drone strikes outside war zones, 540 during the Obama administration, a total of 57 during the Bush administration. So on some of these issues, you compare that to where the current party is. I mean, it's almost incomprehensible. Now, you'll get some other things that just fundamentally disagree. I thought we were supposed to have a fundamental reset with Russia. That hasn't worked out, right? In 2014, the invasion of Crimea, which apparently the Obama administration wasn't all that concerned about, laughed at Romney during the 2012 debate because he actually was concerned about the growth of an aggression of Russia. I'm not sure the record is as sterling as you want to suggest, but
I didn't suggest anything about
nice
his library. I just say he was humble about it.
We got to get some news here, but the texter had a great point. I wonder if the president will try to put his name on that presidential center in Chicago. We'll see. Quick break.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
All right, we were talking so much in the first hour. We got to make this one a quick segment before we get to the say something nice and grab bag. So midterms coming up. CNN had a poll that released over the weekend last week, and almost half the population, Jake Curtis, is now independent, classifies themselves as independent, not tied to a party. What do you think that means in terms of what might happen in November? And I'll tie it to what I think is a definite concern among some Republicans, that this president doesn't seem to care enough about some of the gas and grocery stuff, energy costs, all the stuff that most Americans talk about every day, and I know this because I've been all over the place, and that's the stuff they always want to bring up with me. What do you think?
Yeah, it comes down to kitchen table issues, and I'll use this as my one moment to push IRG. We talk about kitchen table issues, affordability. We do a lot of polling on that, and I think you're right. ultimately, I think you're seeing a shift to maybe more self-identified independence because they don't see either party, frankly, mm-hmm. as addressing those concerns. Housing costs, child care, all these issues. I mean, we talk to people and they are concerned about property taxes. And they may not be the sexiest issues in the world, but that's what people care about. And so I think, yes, if you're the Trump administration, there is some concern there. But also I think there's some uncertainty. I mean, the question comes down, how does this actually play district by district? I mean, look at a state like Wisconsin. Realistically, there's really only one race that matters, District 3, or the 3rd Congressional District in western Wisconsin. I think that it's going to be tough for Van Orden, but also you have a candidate that, I mean, does she really...
They don't have a candidate yet, because there is the primary.
I mean, Cook is very likely
to win. She's polling way ahead.
The establishment has... I think very aggressively gotten behind Cook.
I think DCCC certainly has.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, if it's Cook versus Van Orden, I mean, that's going to be a race, and it comes down to just these basic issues we've talked about. I think the Cook political report has shifted, I think, 7 races. I think that's what you mm-hmm. highlighted. That's a concern. Shifted those races
trending
to the
bad.
Left.
That's the point.
Look, if you're the administration, I think you have to do a better job of going out and talking about the issues that people really care about. And frankly, I would be highlighting some of the issues that the Dems need to explain. When you look at the $1,700 tax credit, I know you guys have talked about this before. I mean, there are some Democrats. The Democratic governor in Colorado has signed his state up.
You mean for the schools?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, right, these are not just dollars. These tax credits do not just benefit the money that goes to private schools, it's public schools as well. I think that is something that if I were Republicans in a state like Wisconsin, I would be asking somebody like Cook to defend that. Now, is it fair? No, but that's politics. And so the left has to explain some things as well, because the partisanship there, I think, has prevented them from supporting policies that they may otherwise support, but because Trump is behind it, they won't.
Joe, are Democrats just going to be having a big dance party in November when they win the midterm?
We shouldn't. Because the defining thing in our politics in this century has been change. 11 of the 13 year elections have been big change elections. This growth in independence, which means people are walking away from being willing to identify with the parties, is to me another part of the recipe for a massive change election. At this point, the indicators look like it's going to be even more of a change election than 2018, and maybe closer to the degree of change 2010 was, but for the other party. And so buckle up if you're a Republican.
It's interesting. I think I brought it up to you guys. So there's a guy I got to interview a little bit for the documentary. It's named John Delavolpe, and he does a youth poll for Harvard. And so he's been studying the youths since 2000. And he is predicting that we are transitioning out of this hyper-partisanship into a new era of just wanting government to work. And so do you think that is a reflection of this 42% or what did we just say the number was for independence?
47.
47% of people who are not identifying themselves with either party, even if they do lean one way and probably when push comes to shove, is a Republican and is not going to go vote for a Democrat all of a sudden, but maybe they won't vote. But is this move to I don't identify with these parties a move towards I just need things to work?
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Yeah,
I think we're all in agreement on that.
But what does it actually take to break this partisanship that is creating the gridlock so that things start to work again versus power and winning?
Policy versus performance. This over reliance on echoing things you read or hear every day on social media or on TV stations that lean one way or the other. We have to separate from that, and that's why I say put down your phone and read a book.
I think you need to change the incentive structures, and that's going to be very difficult to do. As soon as I say two ways in which you could change incentive structures, Jake's going to jump out of his chair. Campaign finance reform and putting an end to partisan gerrymandering would be two ways you could change the incentive structures. Going to things like jungle primaries could be another.
Yeah,
there's ways to do it, but it's going to take a long time.
Gerrymandering things going the other way because we've just seen all that play out over the last 6 months to a year. All right, after the break, say something nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now. Smile on your brother.
All right, Jake Curtis, guest, you have a Say Something Nice for the week.
I do. Because we were talking about the former President Obama, I'll cite his chief of staff for, I think, the second time. Another, I think, establishing how far left the Democratic Party has gone, Rahm Emanuel with a second Wall Street Journal editorial, this time talking about energy and using Texas as a model for truly kind of an all-of-the-above approach, still relying on gas, natural gas, oil, but looking at solar and wind when it makes sense. So, something nice, Rahm Emanuel, former chief of staff to President Obama, apparently the voice of reason in the Democratic Party.
And future presidential candidate.
Probably going nowhere because he's a voice of reason.
That's a good add-on. Joe.
Armed Forces Chairman and Senator Roger Wicker, among the Republicans, I think rightly criticizing this MOU of Versailles, criticizing provisions like the fact that it calls on to immediately lift sanctions on Iranian oil and unfreeze Tehran's assets worldwide. You know, this gets complicated on the financial piece of it, but a lot of the leverage that has existed going back to 1979 has been around dollars and cents. And so I think it is always a good thing when members of a political party are willing to criticize and challenge a president of their own party. That's a common theme for me on Say Something Nice. I am glad that Senator Wicker, who isn't one of the usual suspects, mm-hmm. right? We've talked about the people like Cassidy and
the people who are on their way out
and Tillis who are like on the way out and Trump endorsed against them. That's one thing for them to like criticize the president. For Wicker, who will be in the Senate going forward, for him to have serious concerns about this and to voice those publicly, good on you, sir.
All right. I identify as a Republican. Certainly George W. Bush ran as a Republican and was served as a Republican. But I'm giving him credit for going to the dedication for the Presidential Center, because that showed me something. And, you know, Jake and I have talked, and we have all talked, of course, about sort of my idea that the future in this country, the ability to make things work together as a functioning form of government with a populace that supports that, that's got to be where it's at. And the one person missing is not doing that, and he continues to play games and losing. I was just reading the screen behind Joe, losing the support of our allies because he continues to speak nonsense when we need leaders that don't speak that way. And so I credit George W. Bush for showing up to the dedication of the Presidential Center. That spoke to me. I love that.
Mine is to all of our conservative listeners, specifically one of our listeners who listens, I think, almost every day because they text in almost every day. So this is for the 6516, who sent a very sweet birthday message to me yesterday. And she said, and thanks for responding to my text when you can. I do appreciate it, even though we don't always see things the same way, which is what the show is about, right? Exchanging ideas. And this is a person who does challenge, like text in a lot of challenging things. And so I want to give a big shout out to all the people who sometimes if I say things that make you want to throw your phone or wherever you're listening, but you still listen because that's what this show is about. I acknowledge all of you.
I want to know if her first name is Margaret, so if she can text in. And
all right, 6516 is your first name, Margaret.
I remember a very
Steve
smart...
thinks that he knows who you are.
in a previous iteration.
So
of
much
the show.
For protecting people's anonymity. Wow.
Well, I didn't say the other numbers.
Yes. All right. So after the break, we always wrap it up the grab bag. We'll see where we take that conversation after this point taken. 620 WTMJ.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, Joseph Pecky, what is in your grab bag?
Put a little love for Michelle Obama, who also gave a remarkable speech yesterday. I'm going to quote her. That's where the truth of this country lies, not in grabbing as much as we can get for ourselves or knocking folks down to prop ourselves up, but in the overwhelming goodness, the relentless striving, the quiet dignity that is inside all of us. Thank you, First Lady Obama, for your service as well and for her example. I know I keep going back to Obama, but I've been thinking about it a lot this week.
I love the picture of the First Ladies. You see that they took? And then all of the collectives of the presidents in the first. That's a historic picture.
Yeah.
Members of both parties and different administrations. Jake Curtis.
So, unfortunately, I think I'm going to go to something not uplifting, but...
happens with grab bag.
Usually the quiet dignity of Jake Curtis.
Usually I go with high school basketball or something like that. But no, so I just wanted to highlight something that I hopefully people recognize. So on Monday, a B-52 out of Edwards Air Force Base in California went down, all eight individuals. I say individuals because I think six were service members, two were, I think, Boeing contractors, yeah. Which happens, right? They're a key contractor and help the military out. All eight perished. And I was, you know, it got me thinking, boy, how many recently have died? So between 2006 and 2020, 5,650 service members have died in training related accidents. You know, sometimes it's kind of a joke, but you're building the plane as it takes off. You know, sometimes in the military, I mean, they are literally testing new technology that's never been tested on a different aircraft, and there's inherent risk. I mean, you look at World War II, I think the number was 15,000 service members died in World War II in training, and sometimes they very literally were building it as it took off. So just thoughts and prayers for those folks and their families. Just sad news.
Yeah, well said. And again, support the men and women who serve us because they are doing incredible work every day. We often don't talk about it, not just during the tragic times. Mine's a positive. The start of Summerfest yesterday, I did see the Big Bang from a viewing location a couple miles away. But shout out to Sarah Pancari, the leadership she's shown, the innovative approach to like the Garth Brooks sort of lead into Summerfest. This is magic being performed on our lakefront. Obviously, weather always matters. So far, so good in the weather thing. But the presentation we do to the world with this music festival, which is unique. And I used to travel the country and people always talked about Summerfest. Like, oh my God, that thing is amazing. They would travel here. My only beef is, of course, they don't do the extended. They just do the weekends. I want 1 week.
You and many people.
Yeah, I know. But to Summerfest leadership, Sarah Pancari and all the folks who work so hard, I wish you a very successful Summerfest run. I'll be there Saturday night. So if you're at the Christopher Cross, I think it's U-Line, say hi if you see me, if you know me. I'm not buying everybody a beer unless you have,
unless you have a healthcare.
If you have a healthcare provider ID, then your drink's on me. So I always do. I've done it for years. All right.
I have two. First, as I am looking over Joe's shoulder to the Juneteenth celebration that is happening in Milwaukee right now, a reminder that it is Juneteenth. We have not acknowledged that yet. And that Juneteenth is not Black history. It is our history. And so as an opportunity to learn more about why we celebrate Juneteenth, and what it means to so many people. So just a reminder for that today. It looks like it's a great parade. And the second is I feel I'm ending this week feeling very loved. I did enough celebrating, I think, of ringing in this new decade.
Very tired.
And I would, anyone who, what we did last weekend for my birthday was we rented out a summer camp in East Troy. And the opportunity to hang with your friends, but more importantly, hang with your friends' kids. Like, I've reached that stage of life where getting to watch my friends play aunt and uncle to my kid, getting to play aunt to their kids, and watching them run around in nature and not be on screens, not be on watching TV, and actually just, like, finding snakes and frogs and all of that. Like, it was everything I wanted for my birthday. Last night was everything I wanted for my birthday. And so I'm feeling very blessed, very tired, and ready for the weekend.
How's 40 feeling so far?
Well, as Joe noticed in my final picture of the evening, I rang in the end of my birthday with a fairly large glass of Buffalo Trace. And so I'm feeling 40. I am feeling 40 today.
All right, we got about a minute left. Anything else on anybody's minds? We got the Brewers playing some great baseball. That's going to continue. They got a tough series against the Braves.
Braves, yeah.
I love the way this team plays. They get bad news and they just say, all right, we'll figure it out. And they
I have been going to games since, I'm sure Joe, same thing, since I was a kid. There is something special about this team.
Yes.
We were at two games last week and there's just, I don't know, this could be the year.
How's the kid doing, the new shortstop?
All right.
Well, I was at Tuesday. Right. He made his debut 0-for-3. I mean, he made contact.
Got to hit the next night, which is cool.
What I've heard on him is he's going to be an immediate asset in the field.
Yes.
Some work left to do with the stick.
Probably
that's okay.
But this team, again, Pat Murphy, the guy just continues to astound everybody with his leadership skills. Again, leadership matters.
He needs to get healthy, though. We need Pat to be able to walk up to the mound.
He's getting his hip done, right?
Is that what's happening like in the All-Star break? No, it sounds like he's in some pain.
How's that
going to
work? He's got to limp around with a bad hip for,
I don't know.
Or a replacement hip?
Mizorowski going to be the NL starter in the All-Star game?
Oh, my God.
I don't know how he's not.
It's got to be.
Is he pitching tonight? I think so. All right. Jake Curtis, we'll see you next Friday again.
Absolutely. I'll be here.
I'll be here as well.
When we invite you back, you know you're doing something right. So, well done. He's a lead counsel, corporate counsel for IRG.
General counsel.
Yeah. Smart guy. Joseph Pecky, always brilliant. Thanks for the double feature this week. Appreciate that. We got the half hour left with Kristen.
have you ever been on a scooter?
Not the pay for play scooters.
You've never been on like a Lime scooter?
No.
Would you?
I don't think so.
They're not Oak Creek, right?
No.
Okay.
No, but
Are you a bike guy? What's your last mile of transportation? Just car? You just drive everywhere?
Or walk.
So not a bike, not a scooter.
I mean, I've had a bike in the past, but I don't have one currently.
Okay.
Although I'm thinking about it.
How would you feel if scooters came to Oak Creek?
As long as they stayed out of my neighborhood, I'd be fine with it. Get off my lawn!
You're already dealing with high schoolers all the time, so yes. You can imagine.
Parking in front of my house with their loud cars.
All right, so kids. Why are we talking about this? You may have heard, because I know a lot of the local TV stations have been covering it. So the owner of Lacage, which is one of the clubs in Walker's Point, was walking out of, I don't know which establishment on Old World 3rd Street, but just up the street from us. And there's video footage of it. He's an older guy, maybe a little bit younger than you. But
you're trying to catch his age here.
And someone was on a scooter on the sidewalk, which is not allowed.
Nope.
And ran right into him. And, you know, maybe it's because he's older. Maybe it was a freak accident. Multiple broken bones in his hand. He has
spine
to get
injury.
Two vertebrae fused. I think he broke two ribs. And so now, of course, we're back to the scooter conversation, which is, you know, similar to Deep Thought or 794 or all these things that we like to have lots of opinions on. My opinion about scooters is it is a human problem that as they exist, they are very useful. They are popular. But as far as like, it is one of those examples of like, can we please just have nice things and not have other people ruin it by not following the rules of don't be on the sidewalk. When you're around other people, maybe get to the place where there's less people. Don't just leave them anywhere, like litter, and block the sidewalk for people who are, you know, in a wheelchair. Like, there's just like some common social contract stuff as far as living in a society that if we're going to have something that is useful, don't abuse it.
I completely agree because I'm not against scooters. I think it's a great. Joe was telling me that he jumped on one last night. Here's the warning sign here, and this is in the article from the Journal Sentinel, written by what has got to be one of the best reporter names I've seen in a long time, Isabella Russomano. That's amazing. I want to meet her. Anyway, the warnings for improper use of Lime scooters by the people using them from Lime up three times 2025 over 2024. Going where you're not supposed to be going. Mistreating the equipment, driving in places you're not supposed to drive in. Because they can track all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, bike lanes, yes. That's an appropriate place. And we have so many bike lanes in the city of Milwaukee. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. There's a lot of bike lanes and not always a lot of bikers.
So what's the argument being made to not go on the bike lane versus the sidewalk? I mean, bike lanes are set up for that.
I would imagine it's potentially people, because, you know, Milwaukee also not known for the best driving. And so for a scooter rider's own sense of safety, maybe they feel safer on a sidewalk than in the street where cars are right next to them. This is my assumption. But not realizing, because you see people on bikes sometimes on sidewalks too, which is also not allowed.
Not supposed to happen.
I do think I'm like, what other rules could be in place for these scooters? Because they can control things, right? Like Joe said right now, there's not the new ordinance for Shorewood has not gone into effect yet. So you can take a bike, a scooter all the way up to Shorewood and then it just stops. Like there are abilities.
They have a lot of power.
And constraints that they can put on the scooters to make them slow down in certain areas. You can't park them in certain areas or like, so basically you can't like end your ride. And it will just keep charging you until you put the scooter into a safe area where it can be parked. And then there's certain places where it's just going to stop and you can't take it in. So I also think maybe we should put it as like after midnight, you cannot take a scooter, even though some people might find them useful. But the likelihood that after midnight you are somewhat inebriated, probably higher than others. And I would recommend not riding one of these things
when
you've been drinking. As I've seen my friend who will go unnamed a couple weeks ago, we're like, what happened to your face?
Did a header?
Oh, he had been day drinking all day and then decided to take a scooter home and paid for it with some scrapes on the face.
Take a guess how many rides there were on these Lime scooters in last year.
It was huge because we talked about this with Jeremy once. As
it's
far
a
as
a million,
yeah,
so a million.
That's the thing. It's like, and the city gets a lot of money from it,
mm-hmm.
and so now, it's kind of a hard rock and a hard place. Of like, there is definitely revenue that is coming in. People do find them to be useful as far as like a last mile transportation mode of transportation, but you just gotta be better. Just be like, this is, I feel like you right now, where it's just like, just don't be a jerk.
Yeah, Texter said that it's a concern for their safety, so they drive on the sidewalk so they don't get hit by cars.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. It's, but then that's a disregard for other people's safety who are just trying to walk, who are not moving at 15 miles per hour.
Also, the newest Lime scooters have a like Lime Vision where it has a camera built in so they can see where it's going, what you're doing with it.
Mm.
How about that?
Mm.
I actually have to try it at some point.
I would love to see you on a scooter. This is more content. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take scooters after the show one day and ride them up to the tchotchke shop,
yeah,
and do this a whole day of content for you and I.
Okay.
You in?
Make it a plan, sure. Why not? You going to pay for the scooter?
Sure.
All right. And I'll pay for the tchotchke shop. That's a fair.
I want the utter shot glass.
And I want the old Milwaukee candle. So, right. I mean, we've each found things we like, even though we haven't.
Let's get matching shirts.
Here we go. Kristen and Steve, matching shirts, celebrating all things Milwaukee. Lots more to talk about, dude, after this.
The deliberately worst kept secret in Southeast Wisconsin is a secret no more. You could tell your parents.
My parents.
But, okay, they knew.
But
right.
I did not tell my brother for quite a while.
Straw poll is a straw poll. It's a snapshot at a convention. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez was the winner.
The three most likely nominees today are Mandela Barnes, Sarah Rodriguez, and Fran Hong. Everybody else, it's getting late.
Ridgeland Farms is releasing its remaining beagles. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. now chiming in.
We are committed to humane animal care and to replacing animal testing with effective alternatives wherever possible.
A complete game shutout from Jacob Mizorowski.
I was just trying to find a comp in any sport, and the one I came up with was Usain Bolt. It's like, oh, he had that still.
The finished and fabulous Bob Uecker mural in downtown Milwaukee.
I just wish it didn't end so quickly. That's what I really love about mural making, is just sharing your work with the world.
Day two in the Amandria Brunner trial. The defense says, hold on a second, the Marquette student was speeding.
Would these deaths have occurred even if Amandria was sober? And the evidence is going to show that they would have.
Wisconsin, I'd spent $45 million on OnlyFans. They're spending a lot of money in Green Bay. What's going on up there?
There was an ongoing joke with one of my girlfriends that we would have a channel that was and toes, and we would never have to show our face.
Have you been following the story of this dive-bombing red-winged blackbird in Atwater Park?
A lot of people want to get up and walk around out there, maybe run out there, and got this dive-bombing bird. Watch out.
Not all of us are bird people.
Hey, I went to the ballpark yesterday.
Yeah.
Your 6'7 tall all-star was there, Jacob Mizorowski. 300 people lined up to get a moment with the Miz for a special ball signing. They raised more than $24,000, John.
That's great.
They announced the entire team. Here come your Milwaukee Brewers. Gets a slap on the back from Bryce Terang, and then out he goes. By himself.
Go get him, kid. Enjoy the field by yourself. Soak it up. It's not about you, Cooper Pratt. It's about the Brewers. You're just a part of it.
A few moments later.
Line drive down the right field line, a base hit. And Cooper Pratt has his first big league run batted in.
54 years ago today, we had this huge crisis in Watergate. That was not a constitutional crisis. Richard Nixon followed the law. I maintain that today we are in a constitutional crisis.
It's been good for local businesses, but not for beer supplies.
I don't think Boston realized what was coming to it.
I recall something similar happening when the Wisconsin Badgers played UNLV out in Las Vegas. Bars that were running out of Miller Lite and some running out of brandy.
Green Bay Packers tight end Tucker Kraft. He's recovering from that torn ACL that he suffered last November.
I'm going to be the best tight end in the NFL.
Someone got a birthday calendar.
A happy birthday. 40th
Thank
birthday.
Thank you. 40th birthday.
June 1986 is when you came into this world.
It is.
With the deal officially signed between the U.S. and Iran, the agreement sets up a 60-day ceasefire to hammer out details on issues like Iran's nuclear program.
So not only did you get a present on your birthday, the country of Iran got a really big present.
Big present.
and a jury in Milwaukee County finding Amandria Brunner not guilty on all six charges of causing the deaths of Marquette University lacrosse athletes.
The other guy involved in the collision, Peter McGolgan, it led to both of them being charged, and it's a fascinating strategy.
Once we solicited the expert, we were able to back that up, and his report really did bolster that defense for us.
The stages are set, and Milwaukee's lakefront is ready to rock. Broadcasting live from the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin Mobile Studio at Summerfest.
We're on the lakefront path right behind the Gruber Sports Zone. Beautiful view of the lagoon. You're seeing all kinds of musical fandom because that's what we do here at the world's largest music festival.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
My grass is green.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
The Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text WEEK, W-E-E-K, to the Siding Unlimited talk and text line at 855-616-1620 to hear it again.
Styx, right? And they're playing Summerfest tonight, I believe. I don't know which stage, but I've seen them a bunch of times throughout their long, storied career. It's a good hang for a concert, because you'll know most of the songs.
How old were you when Summerfest started?
I don't know.
Were you in high school?
I worked during, yeah, probably. Yeah, my dad took me when I was in high school.
Okay.
I worked at Summerfest when I was in college as like a cleanup guy.
Nice.
It was a good gig, though.
I bet.
At the big gig. You were at Summerfest for a long time.
Yeah, we got there around 4:30
opening day. So what was it like?
It was awesome. Yeah. I love Summerfest. It was funny. I was talking to Vince as I was leaving yesterday. I was handing out my birthday cupcakes. Vince got one. He was very happy about
it. Did you earn it?
No, I didn't make anyone dance for their cupcake.
He ate a cupcake? Because that's sort of surprising.
Yeah, he was excited about it.
Interesting.
And so I asked him if he was going down at all. And he goes, yeah, like he's the type of guy. And I think there's probably some people who's like, I'll go to Summerfest if I have tickets to see someone specific that I want to see. And then there's people like me who just want to get there and run into the people you're going to run into, find the music that you're going to find, enjoy the weather. And that's very much what yesterday was. As far as we got there, we watched some of the opening ceremonies with all the dignitaries giving their speeches. Saw Chief Lipsky, got to meet the executive director over at Skylight Music Theater, Susan Valera, I think I'm pronouncing that right, who played Fantine on Broadway. So I got to geek out on also Chief Lipsky, big. You know what? We've had the one, we were talking about my favorite song. If I had to do one song for the rest of my life, One Day More. Same with Chief Lipsky.
Seriously?
He's
a big Broadway guy?
Yeah.
So
got to meet a bunch of new people, got to see, run into people that I already knew, hang out with friends, good music. Sapecki was there. Like, it is such a unique thing.
Some Summerfest thing.
Right? Yeah. It is like, it's just the end scene that we have obviously already had our Sazza sampler. But I love just showing up. And now, especially with the Northwestern Mutual playground with Frankie, best playground in the city. And so being able to take your kids, and Mike made a mental note yesterday. He's like, all right, when we bring Frankie down, remember to bring extra clothes because they have the fountains that the kids are running through and like get bring
That's
dry
been around
clothes.
For a while. That's a great addition.
And
too.
So, yeah, it's awesome. It's such a feel good. And then we ended up, I'll give a shout out to, I had not been to Gibraltar before, which is a bar down there, because we got to the end of the night and we're ready to leave. But we usually either take the hop or park elsewhere and walk down. But because Mike had free parking, we parked. And now it's a good reminder of why you don't drive down there. Because if you don't leave before the amphitheater, it is nuts. So we got to the car. I was like, well, let's go get one more drink and let this wait somewhere else instead of waiting in the car. So I'd never gone to this bar, Gibraltar. There was a DJ there last night that was awesome. And so just the vibe of ending the night, met some new people there, danced a little bit. It was great. It was a very fun first day of Summerfest.
And birthday celebration. So
and a birthday celebration.
That's perfect. We're going to actually change, because usually Kathy and I go during the day, hang out, see whoever's playing, but we're going to see specifically Christopher Cross, because I'm a big fan.
And what time is that show?
9:30.
Oh, you did say that. It's past your bedtime.
Yeah, and we're going to meet some folks out there. So I'm looking forward to that. I love Summerfest.
I love Summerfest.
It's been part of my life since my dad took us to the first one. It was just like a couple tents, some music, a lot of beer, and
it was
grass.
Before it was even on, because it wasn't the first one like all over the city.
Yeah, that was an earlier version.
Before it was all at the lakefront.
But the early lakefront version was just grass.
Yeah.
And tents. And it got rough, and I think
when did they start building all the infrastructure?
That's maybe Bo Black era, so that you're talking, God, was that the 80s?
Okay.
70s? Late 70s? Yeah. But what an epic, epic festival, and I'm glad that we host it here in Milwaukee. So I'll see you at Summerfest. I'll see you next Monday.
See you on Monday.
And I'll see all of you on the radio whenever. Thanks for listening.